just looks imposing. Just looks like it has secret rays it could shoot at you. I don't know. I'm Wendell. Good to see you, by the way. I know you could have been somewhere else tonight. Well, I could have too, I guess. But it's good to see you all and on this Memorial Day weekend. I'm Wendell. I'm discovering what it means to be loved by God. That's making all the difference in the world. It really is something that I don't think I'm ever going to get to the end of. I'm just on the tip of the iceberg. But what it means to be loved is changing everything about me, and I just keep wanting to share it with other people. But I'm learning what it means to be loved. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. I've had issues with pornography, with alcohol, with rage and depression and panic. We're in the middle of a three-part series, whatever, three-part discussion called Where We Live. Where We Live. We've been talking about grace and talking about just exploring what it means to be loved and all that the way I introduce myself. And it gets way up and way out sometimes, and it's like that's good thinking, it's good theology, it's good doctrine, it's good whatever, but what about where I live right now? What about that? What about when I wake up in the morning? What about that? So last week we talked about what we thought we signed up for, which were all about our expectations. And we basically had three expectations that we talked about. And the lesson went from bad to worse. It went from kind of sad to really sad. It went from dingy to dark. You get the picture? It just, and there was no cupcake at the end. There was just, you know. And it was all a ploy to try to get you back tonight so you could hear the answer. Obviously, we have a smaller crowd tonight than we did last night. So the ploy didn't work. But anyway, it was about what you expect, what we thought we signed up for. You know, when you get old enough to start having expectations, what are your normal human expectations? And we came up with three, which I'm sure there are others, but these are the three we came up with. First of all, that life should be fair. We expect life to be fair. And the second one is that we expect that our good efforts will be rewarded by some sort of attention and possibly affirmation. You know, surely somebody's going to tell us we're good for what we've done. So we expect for life to be fair, and we expect to be rewarded or at least noticed for our good efforts. And we expect that we will someday get way, way closer to perfection than we are now. We expect life to get better. We expect ourselves to get better. We expect improvement. We're not at all satisfied with today's version of ourselves. So we expect to make some forward progress. So that's what we thought we signed up for. Those are our expectations. That's what we thought we signed up for. Now we're going to talk about what we woke up to. What we actually woke up to, and we wake up every day to the reality of this. So what we expected and what we woke up to. So here's the harsh reality. There will be a cupcake at the end of this lesson, I'm just saying, with a candle on it, maybe sprinkles. So, I don't know, now that's setting the bar too high, sprinkles. But anyway, here's what we woke up to. Here's the harsh reality of life. Life is not fair. And we talked about that a little bit last week, but we just said life is not fair. Somebody will always get a bigger piece of the pie. It doesn't matter if we earn it. It doesn't matter if we deserve it. It doesn't matter if we're older, if we have tenure, if we have certification, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Somebody else will always get a bigger piece of the pie. And we will never matter. Our agenda, our happiness, our well-being will never matter as much to others as we need it to. It just won't. We want to be top priority with somebody, and to us that would be fair. We don't want to be top priority with everybody. But if we just had one or two people where we mattered more than anything to them, so much so that they would just try to meet all our needs and try to make life fair for us, that'd be really good. but we'll never matter as much to others as we need to. Just let that sink in. Ain't that fun? But we just never will. So life is not fair. No, it's not. And the second thing is your efforts will not be rewarded unless they benefit the company. We live in a nation, we live in a culture that we're mostly only rewarded in that we produce something that benefits the company. Not necessarily the community, but the company. That which keeps the wheels turning in our culture. We'll be rewarded for what we do. If you're valued, it's only for what you do. You'll rarely ever be noticed or rewarded for who you are. You might from time to time, but it's rare that you'll be rewarded for who you are. So when you cease to be able to do the math. When you cease to be able to do, you are no longer valued. There are several things that I want to say here. I wish Thad was here tonight because he's come up with a great, I don't know how long he's had this saying, but first time I heard it, I thought, I will remember that, but I will give him credit for it because I didn't come up with it. We are not human doings. We are human beings. I love that. That sticks with me. But we live in a world that does not reward us for being human. It only rewards us for what we do, what we can produce. I have several problems with this. There are some people who were born with, they're not as capable of doing as much for whatever reason. They're not as capable of producing as much on the assembly line of life, if you want to put it that way. So immediately our culture puts them down a notch or two. That's just simply the cards we were dealt when we were, you know, you're too tall, you're too short, you're too fast, you're too slow, you're whatever. There's some, you know, some, you weren't dealt the right cards to produce the maximum amount that we need you to produce as a citizen of this company or as a worker in this company. That's one problem. Another problem is that you only have a certain prime of life when you can really produce maximum for the company. You have to go through training. If you do well in training and you prove yourself, then you're hired into the company. You know, I'm being vague here, but just the company of our culture, the way the wheels turn, if you do well in your education and you're placed well, and then you have X amount of years for maximum production for the company, and then you get old, and then you're worth nothing. The church does this to people. Our culture does this to people. Everything. It's just where we live. I'm going to take a rabbit trail, but we're doing something about that here at Broadway. We literally have a group, and there are a lot of people in this room who are in that group who are, first of all, they went through like a step group on how can you be healthy as a senior when the culture says you're no good because you can't produce like you used to? And then we're asking some of the hard questions of ourselves of, so how do we deal with life? And the next thing that's coming out, which those of you who are in that group, the book is finished. I just need to get it edited. We're going to have a book that they work through where they literally share their senior wisdom. And like, we're starting out with 12 pertinent topics that you deal with in life, just human life. And each week they're going to meet and talk about these topics and then write, each one of them is going to write like a mini essay, and then we're going to put them together in a book and make it available, and it's going to be called Senior Wisdom, and it's going to knock your socks off. And for once and for all, it won't be once and for all because it takes a while to get things turned around. But for starters, people will say, oh, these are not people we want to sit on the sidelines. These are the people who ought to be in the front of the line or the most frequently consulted people in the mix. So anyway, that was a rabbit trail. But the harsh reality is that our efforts will not be rewarded unless they benefit the company. That we live in a world that rewards human doings, not human beings. And so you're rarely often noticed for what, or valued for who you are, only what you can produce. And then here's the third one, and we ought to know this for sure in here. We are powerless to improve our inner self. That is step one. That is the first thing we admit when we start down the healing road. We admitted we were powerless over addictions and compulsive behaviors, that our lives had become unmanageable. I have to tell myself this every day. I don't know where you are on all this, but I still go back to that. I listened to some of the long-term recoverers from alcoholism and drug addiction back when I first got into CR. And they said over and over, if you don't get the first three steps, just forget the whole thing. If you can't, if you're not working the first three steps, you're not recovering. Where you admit you're powerless, you admit you need a higher power, and you reach out to that higher power. Something bigger beyond yourself. So we're powerless to improve our inner selves on our own. And the biggest reason we should know this by heart in here is that we are wounded and we are stuck. And we're stuck in survival mode. Emotionally, I hate to just overquote Thad, but he said something really good this morning in the gathering. He was talking about economically, when you are in survival mode, when you don't know when your next meal is, where it's coming from, you are walking a thin razor edge. And your only agenda in life is, where will my next meal come from? There is no room on that razor edge to dream or plan or hope for anything bigger other than I just want to survive. The same thing is true in recovery. When we are in a desperate fix to fix ourselves, when we are emotionally in this storm, it's cloudy, it's smoky, it's confusing, it's chaotic, and we find ourselves in this storm trying to fix ourselves. We don't have the resources. We don't have the mental or emotional resources to fix ourselves, because all we're thinking of is self-protection and survival, and how can I take the next step? How can I use the next person to my benefit? Where will I get my next fix? Where will I, whatever? How can I feed my addiction? Whatever it is, we're just living on that razor edge. And so it's ludicrous to think that in the midst of that crisis, we can somehow self-fix, that we can come up with a solution for our issues, because we can't. We're just too desperate to take the next breath or the next hit or whatever you want to call it. We're too tired for creative self-fixing. The creative juices are there, but they're miles away from the front of our brain. But, and I made up a word, that stuckness. I'm using stuck as a state of being. That stuckness, that's even hard to say, stuckness, actually sets us up for grace. It actually is exactly where we need to be. When you've struggled on that razor's edge of emotional and relational and mental survival for so long, you finally get to the place where you say, this is killing me. I cannot do this, and it's killing everybody I care about. I cannot do this any longer. That's when we finally stop and we finally reach out for grace, which is basically step two and three. We're ready to reach out for something bigger than us. So we've talked about, okay, what we woke up to. We woke up to this harsh reality that life is not fair, that our efforts will not be rewarded unless they benefit the company, and we're powerless to improve ourselves. So that's what we woke up to. That's the harsh reality. Well, let's look at the grace reality. And this may not hit us all good, but it helped me back in the day. It helped me. Here's the grace reality, not the harsh reality, but the grace reality. And don't start throwing stuff at me. I'm going to get the first sentence out, and I'm going to get into the second one as quick as I can, because the first one you're going to say, what? Just let me get into the second sentence. The grace reality is life is not fair. Don't throw anything. Life isn't fair. The fact that I exist is not fair. I did nothing to deserve life. I didn't get here because something was fair or just. Are you following me? Nobody did anything to earn my existence. Nobody produced anything. I mean, I know there was that sex thing that took place, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about, because a lot of other people could have been born besides me out of that same act. But what I'm saying is, there's been no debt paid, there's been no price paid or anything to deserve my existence. I don't deserve to live. I've done nothing to exist or to deserve the fact that I'm alive and can experience life. I've done nothing. When I was at my lowest low, 28 years old, with a 2-year-old daughter and a wife of 6 or 7 years, I forget exactly how many years, and they said, it's cancer, it's bad, it's systemic, and finally one doctor finally said, she's probably got about 3 months. That was after a year and a half of trying to get some sort of clarity. They wouldn't give it to me. Finally, one doctor, the radiologist, said, she's probably got about 3 months. And I remember what most anybody would say in that time. I remember thinking, this is not fair. My wife is a good person. She doesn't have any vices that are bad on her health. She eats healthy. She exercises. She tries to help people. We're in the ministry. I don't get this. This is not fair. And at that point, somehow, this thought came to me. If you want to talk fair, let's talk fair. It's not fair that you exist. It's not fair that you even got a chance to live. It's not fair that Carol got a chance to live even 30 years. No, none of us deserve even to live a second. And yet she's lived 30 years. You see what I'm saying? We're all here because of grace. Life is hard, but I never know good, and I never know beauty, and I never know love. Unless I exist. So, yeah, life sucks. Life isn't fair. I'm not noticed and rewarded like I think I should be. I can't fix myself, but I'm alive. I'm alive. And since I'm alive, I have the full potential to notice and recognize and celebrate love and beauty and goodness and grace. I have a chance to do that. Now, does that seem like a consolation prize to you? At one point, I felt like, well, okay, if that's all I get, that's what I'll take. But if you really stop and think about it, you think, consolation prize? You're alive. That is not a consolation prize. That is the prize. That's as good as it. What is the alternative? Being dead, so we have a chance to live. So anyway, there's nobody responding tonight. I'm thinking, does this not mean anything to you? I'm telling you, it meant something to me to realize that I have the chance to live. The second thing is that my efforts to do good and be good, I thought for a while, impressed God. And I worked on that paradigm for a long time, on that assumption that I could impress God by what I could do. And I think, you know how when kids first learn how to color, and I mean they'll get a bunny rabbit or something, and they'll color it purple, and you think, I've never seen a purple bunny rabbit. But they color it purple, and they get all out of the lines, and they color, different parts of the picture all the wrong color, and it's just, but when they come and give it to you, you're not like, yeah, I've got an artist here, That's not what you're thinking. But what you are thinking is, they colored that for me, and they gave it to me. That's what's important to me. And so what we try to do to impress God, or what we try to do to gain God's favor by being good or being righteous or being, I'm a better Christian than so-and-so, I don't know that God hangs that one on the refrigerator, you know? But when out of the sincerity of our heart we say, I'm not so good at this, but I want to love you and I want to let you love me, and I have a hunch I'm going to get all out of the lines and I'm going to pick inappropriate colors, and you know, but right now this is between you and me, this is what a bunny looks like, and I'm going to give it to you, I'm going to share this with you. That one goes on the refrigerator. That one catches his attention. So my efforts to let God love me and for me to love God back, those efforts are always rewarded, but not the way I thought. Not by promotions and not by money and not by stuff like that. It's that the refrigerator that God and I share has some of my pictures on it. Do any of y'all have grandkids and kids' pictures on the refrigerator? I mean, do you have some of them? What happens when you walk by and see them? I mean, you know, what does it do? I'll leave that up to you. So nothing that I say or do or produce or perfect or whatever, I think I'm perfecting, doesn't necessarily impress God. Maybe my effort impresses God. I don't know. I think he chuckles more than anything. But my efforts to let God love me, I think you love me enough to accept this purple bunny rabbit. Yeah, I think you love me enough to think it's pretty cool. So I'm going to give it to you. That's what's rewarded. And in my life, all the days and weeks and months and years that I spent trying to do good, trying to be righteous, trying to be right, trying to be moral and ethical and doctrinally and theologically precise and biblically correct and all this stuff, it always left me empty, afraid. But when I just relaxed and said, I believe my daddy loves me, purple bunny rabbits and all, I believe he loves me, that's when life changed. And I would call that an enormous reward. An enormous reward. The peace, the joy, the freedom. If that's not a reward, I don't know what is. I know people who are freaking millionaires who say, I wish I had what you had. I don't have that. I've got a garage full and I've got one in Florida and one in Maine, but I haven't got what you've got, that peace, that joy. So it's not physical rewards, it's something inside. And then here's the last thing. Grace doesn't necessarily improve me or make me into a perfect person. It just kind of silently transforms us. And the other day on the podcast, it's usually just me and Wayne and JB, and Megan Davidson stuck her head in the door, so we just pulled her in and shoved a microphone in front of her and said, you're on the podcast today. And she was like, what? Yeah, you're on the podcast today. So she kept pushing the microphone away until we got to the very end, and all of a sudden she goes grabbing for it. Because we were talking about grace and the profound effect that grace has on us, the transformative power that grace has on us. And she said, I've got a picture. I've got an analogy. She said, it's almost like this. And maybe I've shared it in here already. If I have, I'm sorry. But it's worth sharing twice. She said, grace is this stream, this beautiful, clear, moving stream. And we're like a rock that's rugged and rough and jagged. And we get thrown into that stream. And we start to tumble down that stream. And we get caught in the power and the momentum of grace. And over time, as we tumble, months, years, decades down the road, when you pull that same rock out of the creek, you look at it and it's shiny and it's got its own unique shape and the jagged edges are gone and grace has done its work. When you get caught up in something bigger than yourself. So I don't call that being made perfect. I don't like the idea of perfection. But I think the rough edges are parts that have been somehow added to us that aren't really part of us. And so the stream just takes off, the current takes off all these artificial edges and jagged points that aren't really part of who we are, who God made us to be. And now all of a sudden you see that's the essential God, or that's the essential person that God had in mind when he created this person, whether it's me or you and whatever. So grace knocks off the not you. Is it okay to make up words and stuff? Grace knocks off all of the not you. I don't know. Makes sense to me. So, you know, my idea now, and I don't even know how this is going to work, but my idea is just to stay in the stream. Just stay in the stream. What are you going to do today? I'm going to stay in the stream. I used to say I'm going to let God love me. It's the same thing. It's the same thing, but it's just putting a different picture on it. What are you going to do today? I'm just going to stay in the stream. I'm going to stop expecting. I'm going to stop working. I'm going to stop critiquing. And I'm just going to let the stream of grace do its thing on me. And let's see where it goes. Let's see what happens. All right, that's the end of the lesson. You can turn the podcast off because I want to share something personal.